Good afternoon, Adam Olson. John Jurisic here. We're just a few days away from Christmas.
Yes, we are. It's blustery
and
outside.
And it's blustery. Yes. I mean, I'm meeting in your office in Sydney, and I came down by the water.
Lockside, yeah.
Yeah, I was even a bit scared.
Blowing around when you're out there?
Yeah.
Well, you know, they storm surge, roads like that with sea level rise, should I say, are
okay.
vulnerable.
So listen, I got a story for you.
Okay.
Because first of all, I'm going to do the following.
Okay.
Is Santa Claus in the room? Well, you know what? Many years ago when I was young, like you.
Yeah.
Not thinner. I played Santa Claus.
Than me?
Yeah. I played Santa Claus. I was a Santa Claus at a mall. Not sitting. I was in an outside mall.
Right.
And so if you occasionally hear, ho, 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 you never know. We're really close to Christmas.
That's you reminiscing.
Anyway, enough of the frivolity. What we talk about here are your really fun and informative trips to businesses on the peninsula.
Yeah.
And I understand recently you went to see Nicholson Manufacturing.
Yeah, a little less recent, but yeah, you know, it's reaching back into the memory. I think it was
when you're my age, everything is recent.
Something like that, yeah. But yeah, we went and had a tour, and you know, as we've talked about, one of the best parts of this job is being able to put the request out and get the invite, and then get the tour. And it was a fascinating tour. I don't know that many people in our riding know what goes on behind the big mustard building, on the airport.
Isn't that the case for so much of the business around the airport?
Well, in fact, I mean, we're going to be talking about a lot. I'm going to continue doing these, hopefully, once a month. In the new year, I've got three, actually.
You know about two.
I've got a third one. Western Forest Products. I don't know if people know that we grow tree farm trees here on the Saanich Peninsula as well. So we're going to go for that tour. Yeah, write it down on your list. That's exactly right. We're going to go and visit Viking. We're going to visit Scotty Plastics, and we're going to visit Western Forest Products. So yeah, I mean, this is one of the best.
It's fantastic, Adam. Okay, unbelievable.
And there's amazing things going on behind those doors. So if we can kind of peel that back a little bit and expose it to people, that's a good deal.
Absolutely. Tell us about Nicholson. What do they do? Where is it? You know, kind of context.
So Nicholson has been around here for about 30 years or something, I think, like that. And they are in forestry. And what they do is they make debarking machines and bunching machines. So the big, meaty, mean-looking front-end, well, not their front-end loaders. They're like excavator-looking things with a big claw on it. They moves logs around, right? Big, tough, big, heavy-duty, tough machines.
Yeah.
And then debarking machines, which every single, you know, sawmill in the world has these debarking machines, which, you know, you run the logs through it and it peels the bark off before it goes through.
And they're
the
built here in Sydney.
The best.
Unbelievable.
The best are built here in Sydney.
I was doing some work in Vanderhoof earlier this year.
Yep.
I go meet Nechako Mechanical.
Yep.
Who does a lot of work for the forest industry.
Right.
Which is not just BC.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a global industry, a ton of it in Southeast USA. Hey, I go, by the way, I'm from Victoria. Okay. Hey, do you know Doug Jeffrey down there, Nicholson Manufacturing? I go, yeah. They use all their equipment.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and they
in Vanderhoof.
They use their equipment. Their equipment is used around the world. And you know, one of the things about making good equipment is that it's kind of like a business limiting factor. When the equipment that you make works so well, you know, people don't need to replace it very often.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of their business is making really great equipment, but the other part of their business, which is really important, is making the parts. You know, because there are parts that like the teeth that rip the bark off, for example.
No, those, like those a
need,
car.
That's right.
Those they build a car replaced. And the parts.
They need to be replaced, and part of their business is to make sure that they can provide as little downtime into those sawmills. Because of course, if there's not logs going through the sawmill, they're not making money.
Yeah.
So that's part of their business model, is to have parts believe they've got a location in Europe. They've got a location in New Zealand, and they've got a location here. And they stock basically the machine in parts.
Yeah.
In those locations, and so that they can ship.
So they're on the other side of the highway.
That's right.
On beat, a sort of off, well, crossroads with Beacon.
It's like McDonald Park Road, I think. Is that McDonald Park Road?
I don't think so, but McDonald Park Road is just about a block away. Behind them in that area is Scott Plastics, is C-Star, I think the old Ramsey Group, now United Engineering. They're in that cluster, which actually is part of a new Sydney community plan. It's fascinating.
That's right.
The beginning parts of a community plan that are going to include a lot of residential. But those are early, early days for Sydney and that count. But they're right in there. Okay, so I think there's, about 120 people working there?
Yep.
Isn't that crazy? It's like 120 people working there.
Highly skilled labor, manufactured. They build these machines, from the ground up. So, from the raw materials, they manufure these.
Yeah.
They've got machinists, they've got engineers, they've got designers, they've got, within the whole gambit.
Within the occupational category, within manufacturing, they will fall under what we call metal fabrication.
Right.
So all of this stuff uses metal, and huge amounts of it in big, big, large slabs.
Go ahead. That was one of the pieces that I learned while I was there was just how vulnerable our industries are, and industries are generally, to rising costs elsewhere, or the tariffs that the United States put on steel. And you think, Canada's going to pick up that, but we're such a minor stop along the way that because the Americans put tariffs on steel and aluminum, steel that was coming from Asia wasn't coming at the frequency and at the volumes that it was previously, and so it really put a strain on businesses
on their costs.
Like Nicholson, and on their costs. Yeah, that's right. Because the steel that they were pulling in there is small time compared to.
So here I am watching CNN, watching what I consider to be a crazy maniac in the presidential office, slapping these tariffs, and 2 miles down the road, there's a significant impact on a business.
That's right.
Our region.
It just highlights the global nature of our business.
Wow.
This has come up a number of times, how we as a jurisdiction have to take great care in the decisions that we make and the policies that we put forward, because the downstream impacts on that
are direct.
Absolutely.
Are direct.
And oftentimes difficult to see until actually maybe it's too late. So
what was your what are your just sort of impressions when you walked in? Was it just like, for someone who will never walk in there, give us a sense of, I guess, size, the majesty of the whole place, or what?
It's a lot bigger than I think that you see from the road. And to see a full manufacturer, right? You see the finished product, which is this big Medill
debarker
excavator looking machine, right? That's looming over top of you. You go further into the back where they've got the welding machines and the fabricators. And realize that actually these parts all come from just raw material, and that the people in there are just like
magicians, just almost,
machining what looks like rusty old steel into shiny, amazing parts that make these machines work. So it is one of those times where you kind of think, man, we as a species, we're pretty incredible. We're pretty incredible that we've been able to develop and design these things to work the way that they do, and to think that one of the best companies in the world at doing this is right here on the Saanich Peninsula gives you cause for pause. Let's just put it that way.
Were you able to touch upon some of the operational issues that they're challenged with that you're actually able to potentially help with? That being some of the housing stuff, some of the skilled trade stuff, some of the transportation stuff. Did that come up in the course of your visit with them? And I'm not asking for answers. That's not the point of these podcasts. But I'm curious if it came up.
Well, so the big one that came up was skilled labor.
Really? Lack of it.
The lack of skilled labor. That's right. Most of their employees there are in their 50s, even to their 60s, and they said that their number one recruit is someone who's been working in a manufacturing industry in Ontario for the last 30 years that wants to come and work 10 years till retirement.
And
who's looking at the West Coast as a place to retire to.
Wow.
So they're attracting people at the end of their career.
Okay.
Because they can't get enough, they can't get the younger generation to get in there. So I never thought that I would hear that. That's the first thing. The second thing is they are using a lot of CNC machines and a lot of the machine work that was done by a machinist is now being done by a machine.
Yeah.
And one that you can program overnight and it will produce 15 or 20 parts.
Yeah.
And
still
and
need skilled labor to run the computer that runs the CNC machines.
Right.
But a lot of it, in other words, there's active automation going on. And that's out of right. necessity or out of efficiency or both?
Yeah, and I actually think that one of the things that we talked about this after I went on the visit, and it was eye-opening for me just around the types of things that they're automating. You know, and they're automating some of the smaller parts that are very difficult for humans to make.
Okay.
And they're automating those aspects of it. And we oftentimes think of automation in the context of it's going to lose us jobs or it's going to cost us jobs.
Well, that's what I was kind of leading towards maybe because I don't think so, hey?
Well, part of it, I think that it was eye-opening for me because, you know, kind of crude as I am in this, not crude. And as uneducated as I am in this.
Yeah, I mean, that's a sophisticated operation going on in there.
One of the things that I recognized was that when we talk about innovation and automation taking jobs away, in many instances, companies are automating because they can't find the skilled labor to do the jobs that used to be done. And so it's actually filling roles that they can't fill with human beings.
I think that's a fascinating point because there's a misconception out there, and I suspect in some instances if you're ultimately making 10 million little bits of one's kind,
right,
that you could ultimately you could find a way to reduce jobs. But I think in these advanced manufacturing companies like Nicholson, they're introducing advanced technology and automation because There aren't people to do those jobs, not because they're entirely becoming more efficient. I guess that does happen at some point, but they're creating new jobs, aren't they, Adam?
That's right. Well, the jobs that they're creating, they're moving from the floor to the desk.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So these are people that are the designers, people that are designing these parts. So it used to be that a machinist would machine the part. Now an engineer designs the part. And designs the CAD drawings or the computer programming to put into the CNC machine, and then the machine machines the part. So the jobs are changing. We are training computer engineers, software engineers, and designers rather than machinists.
Wow.
And
can we talk about that training piece?
Sure.
In other words, briefly, are our educational institutions like Chemosin? To a lesser degree, Uvic, I'm not sure. Are they keeping up with the technology change?
Well, I don't know that I have a clear answer for that, but what I can say is probably not. And the reason why I can speculate on that is because the technology is changing so fast. And I know that governments are having a hard time keeping up with it, and I think that the innovators are always one step ahead. The people that are disrupting marketplaces are disrupting early and often, and it makes it for a really tough job for post-secondary institutions and
to keep up.
That's right. And actually, I think that we have to take a look at our teaching style as well.
Hmm.
You know, if we are teaching people, I was in a media generalist program before I went and worked for the Victoria Salmon Kings. And it really didn't teach me anything but the tools of curiosity and to ask questions and to go look for the answers. So I think that to say, here, this is how you use a CNC machine, now go and be a machinist or a CNC operator for the rest of your life, that's not going to work. But giving me the broad ability to be able to strip back any kind of machine and figure out how to use it. Those skill sets are very important.
Yeah, I'm a UVic alumni.
Right.
And I frankly don't remember anything I studied. But more importantly, is that it taught me how to think.
Right.
And so I hear you. I think that's what you're saying. You know, after we've maybe done a few more of these sessions, we should go interview some folks at Camosun College. And just sort of, not sort of in a confrontational way, but just here's some of the things that are going on out there. How are you guys keeping up?
Well, so they've got that School of Innovation out there.
We'll talk to them.
That School of Innovation, I went on a tour of that because, you know, I'm fascinated by this kind of stuff.
Recently?
And, this was within the last year.
After they've put that new Babcock Center in there.
Yeah, but this is in the old part of the school.
Oh, okay.
And they have got all sorts of fun little machines that make stuff. They've got 3D printers and they've got, right? And what they do is they partner with small, like ultra small businesses to help be, and they're the research and development arm for it. So they were developing a kite for kite surfing, right? And lightweight materials, heavy duty materials that can take a beating but are good. They were designing, they designed for the sledge hockey teams for Canada, they designed a seat that was more efficient.
Sledge,
that's right. And that was form fit, right? Man. So they're exploring different materials. They're, you know, how to use those materials.
We'll go for an interview out there as well.
Be awesome.
You know, because that matches where companies like Nicholson are at. You know, they're at the bleeding edge of innovation, trying to keep up with a global marketplace. And are our schools keeping up? They would say yes, but let's explore that further down the road in the new year. Last question, because we're getting on to almost 20 minutes. Man, you know, I think you and I could go on for hours and we wouldn't even know it. Our customers would. They would just leave. But we're like, oh, man, we're so interesting. Tell me about the sort of transportation component to this, because there's a lot of companies that are right beside the airport, and I don't think we entirely appreciate how much a role the airport plays with the growth of industry out here. Mm-hmm. And when you think about moving, I mean, they make a product that's huge, that's heavy, that's hard to move around. Well, guess what? We've got a ferry just down the road, and we have an airport and also we can go down to Pat Bay. So a lot of companies are in and around the airport for that reason.
That's right.
And I don't think a lot of folks make the connection. The airport's not just providing travel services for people to get to another country. You want to expand a little bit up on that, and then we'll probably say goodbye and start our eggnog and rum and whatever.
Well, I mean, I've talked often about how I'm quite proud of how important, how critical Saanich North and the islands, this riding that I represent, is to the rest of the region, indeed to southern British Columbia and to British Columbia, not just the home of the legislature, really, but the home of
or Butchered Gardens.
Butchered Gardens. That's right. but we have the like you said, the ferries and the airport, and these are incredibly important commercial assets for the whole region. And this is the home. Our riding is the home to that. So I think that there is a reason why these companies have settled here. We have well-developed tech areas and
manufacturing
business areas and manufacturing areas in Keating, which is just down the road as well, and in West Sydney and North Saanich around the airport. I think that they're quite happy to have the ability to fly, you know, their investors or their customers in and out right there. Here we are, right? And so I think that this is one of the important parts of my job, is to continue to talk about the importance of not only these businesses, but
the supply chain, so to speak.
Transportation assets
and
making sure that it's not lost on anybody. And it's certainly not lost on the current Minister of Transportation, because I don't know that a week's gone by that I haven't, well, maybe a week has gone by, but I talk to her about it often. About how we can increase connectivity with the rest of the region and the Sanders Peninsula, whether it be through transit or whether it be through optimizing the transportation routes that we already have. So it is a big part of this job is to make sure that in many instances we're getting out of the way of ourselves. Well, we need to invest in those areas.
Sometimes on the advocacy side or on the affordable housing scenario, and not because there's a competition, but just pure demand and supply, one could argue that there are more affordable houses in the West Shore. And when I prompt some of these manufacturing CEOs, just out of curiosity, why don't they do business over there? I mean, they'd be right close to the... Well, no, John, we can't do that because we need to be close to the airport. We need to be close to the water. We need to be close to the ferries. And it's like, wow, like it sometimes we just don't make that connection, how very important that is.
Well, and the Sanders Peninsula at one point used to be the Langford that Langford is today. The cheap housing used to be out here. And I think that this goes to the point that you were making about, like, my mom tells me in the, you know, she remembers when she was living out in the Saanich Peninsula back in the 70s and early 80s, that, you know, they're building the BC Box neighborhoods here like you wouldn't believe, all over the Saanich Peninsula. Those houses were, you know, $80,000, $120,000. Now those exact same houses, 35 years on down the road, are $600,000,
$700,000. Yeah, I bet that's low.
So I think that we have to take great care, and when I say we, my municipal colleagues have to take great care in how we're developing our communities, making sure that we're building complete communities, making sure that there is access to more attainable housing, and that we're building right across the spectrum of housing.
Yeah, and might I suggest, that is just not the politician's responsibility. It actually could be arguably your job, but it's every citizen's responsibility to be accountable for how the community grows. And so I'm a huge proponent of you don't have to be a politician. You don't have to be a civil servant. Communities grow by the way people plan and are involved with them.
That's right.
And the advanced manufacturing companies we have out here that are world class, the transportation facilities we have that support those companies, that's all out here. And I'm so glad, Adam, that you're talking about it.
And for those that are concerned about the use of the word grow, because I know that there's those people out there that are concerned, communities don't always have to, you know, you hear that. I think that how we evolve our communities, how our communities are evolving, we say, oh, humans don't like change. Well, whether you don't like change or not, we change every day. I have more gray hair today than I did yesterday. I have less hair.
I unfortunately don't have more hair.
I have less hair today than I had yesterday. Part of it was because I pulled some of my hair out yesterday.
I see.
Also a function of my job. There is change going on all the time. And whether or not those that don't grasp onto the fact that there is that change that's occurring, let it just happen. And I think that's when these things get out of control. And we have to recognize that being an active member of the community, actively participating in the conversation and the dialogue, and being an active part of the evolution of our communities is absolutely necessary and completely welcome.
I think grow, the word grow and growth, really needs to be redefined for a modern society because it no longer means bigger, larger, more. I think it now means more efficient, innovative, technology adaptation, change management. As you described it with Nicholson, they are growing, but they're not entirely getting bigger.
That's right.
They're just becoming more innovative, more competitive in a changing global environment.
100%.
All right, my friend, we got 25 minutes. I think we're going to go, Santa just entered the room.
There he is.
So Merry Christmas to you. Can't wait for...
Happy holidays and season's greetings to all the people out there.
Yes, absolutely. Did you want to say anything?
I'm looking forward to 2019.
Okay.
You know, I'm always looking forward. I'm always looking forward to the opportunities, and 2019 is going to be a good year.
Okay, well, on that note, happy holidays to everyone. Have a very safe New Year's Eve, and we'll talk to you in the new year. See you, Adam.
Peace.